Well, I fixed that as we go.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to have just an off-the-cuff chat between you and me, us. We want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand. We all agree tonight, all of the speakers have agreed, that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have a very serious problem, but our people have a very serious problem. America's problem is us. We're her problem. The only reason she has a problem is she doesn't want us here. And every time you look at yourself, be you black, brown, red, or yellow, a so-called Negro, you represent a person who poses such a serious problem for America because you're not wanted. Once you face this as a fact, then you can start plotting a course that will make you appear intelligent instead of unintelligent. What you and I need to do is learn to forget our differences. When we come together, we don't come together as Baptists or Methodists. You don't catch hell because you're a Baptist, and you don't catch hell because you're a Methodist. You don't catch hell because you're a Methodist or a Baptist. You don't catch hell because you're a Democrat or a Republican. You don't catch hell because you're a Mason or an Elk. And you sure don't catch hell because you're an American, because if you was an American, you wouldn't catch no hell. You catch hell because you're a black man. You catch hell, all of us catch hell for the same reason. So we are all black people, so-called Negroes, second-class citizens, ex-slaves. You are nothing but an ex-slave. You don't like to be told that. But what else are you? You are ex-slave. You didn't come here on the Mayflower. You came here in a slave ship, in chains, like a horse or a cow or a chicken. And you were brought here by the people who came here on the Mayflower. You were brought here by the so-called pilgrims or founding fathers. They were the ones who brought you here. We have a common enemy. We have this in common. We have a common oppressor, a common exploiter, and a common discriminator. So once we all realize that we have this common enemy, then we unite on the basis of what we have in common. And what we have foremost in common is that enemy, the white man. He's an enemy to all of us. I know some of you all think that some of them aren't enemies. Time will tell. In Bandung, back in, I think, 1954, was the first unity meeting in centuries of black people. And once you study what happened at the Bandung Conference and the results of the Bandung Conference, it actually serves as a model for the same procedure you and I can use to get our problem solved. At Bandung, all the nations came together. They were dark nations from Africa and Asia. Some of them were Buddhists. Some of them were Muslim. Some of them were Christian. Some of them were Confucianists. Some were atheists. Despite their religious differences, they came together. Some were communists. Some were socialists. Some were capitalists. Despite their economic and political differences, they came together. All of them were black, brown, red, or yellow. The number one thing that was not allowed to attend the Bandung Conference was the white man. He couldn't come. Once they excluded the white man, they found that they could get together. Once they kept him out, everybody else fell right in and fell in line. This is the thing that you and I have to understand. And these people who came together didn't have nuclear weapons. They didn't have jet planes. They didn't have all of the heavy armaments that the white man has. But they had unity. They were able to submerge their little petty differences and agree on one thing, that though one African came from Kenya and was being colonized by the Englishmen, and another African came from the Congo and was being colonized by the Belgian, and another African came from Guinea and was being colonized by the French, and another came from Angola and was being colonized by the Portuguese, when they came to the Bandung Conference, they looked at the Portuguese and at the Frenchmen and at the Englishmen and at the other Dutchmen and learn or realize that the one thing that all of them had in common, they were all from Europe. They were all Europeans, blonde, blue-eyed, and white-skinned. They began to recognize who their enemy was. The same man that was colonizing our people in Kenya was colonizing our people in the Congo. The same one in the Congo was colonizing our people in South Africa and in southern Rhodesia and in Burma and in India and in Afghanistan and in Pakistan. They realized all over the world where a dark man was being oppressed, he was being oppressed by the white man. Where the dark man was being exploited, he was being exploited by the white man. So they got together under this basis that they had a common enemy. And when you and I here in Detroit and in Michigan and in America, who have been awakened today, look around us, we too realize here in America, we all have a common enemy. Whether he's in Georgia or Michigan, whether he's in California or New York, he's the same man. Blue eyes and blonde hair and pale skin. Same man. So what we have to do is what they did. They agreed to stop quarreling among themselves. Any little spat that they had, they'd settle it among themselves. Go into a huddle. Don't let the enemy know that you got a disagreement. Instead of us airing our differences in public, we have to realize we're all the same family. And when you have a family squabble, you don't get out on the sidewalk. If you do, everybody calls you uncouth, unrefined, uncivilized, savage. If you don't make it at home, you settle it at home. You get in the closet, argue it out behind closed doors. And then when you come out on the street, you pose a common front, a united front. And this is what we need to do in the community and in the city and in the state. We need to stop airing our differences in front of the white man. Put the white man out of our meeting, number one. And then sit down and talk shop with each other. That's all you got to do.
White Americans have a criminal history. They have a criminal nation. The nation is built on criminality and murder and exploitation. It is a part of their collective psyche. The United States is a mafia government. No one has done more damage and degradation and murder, rape, and robbery than Europeans. Yes. Therefore, in order to escape confrontation with their true criminal nature, they must accuse others of being criminals, what we call projection. They must become obsessed with the criminality of other people. And black folk become those other people, you see. But as Clinton Cox said, you call the Indians savages so you could behave toward them what? Savagely. That's the function of stereotyping, you see. If I call you a criminal, then I can treat you what? Criminally. I don't owe you justice. In fact, shooting you in the street is justice. We know you are already a criminal. Why should we bother to take you to trial? Yes, that's what it is. We're doing a service. We're saving the taxpayers' money. What have we lost? A criminal? What are you complaining about? Yeah, this is the deal. What does it mean then? When you can become, then often people, in order to escape certain problems, become obsessed with other issues to the point where they don't have time or the energy or anything else to think about anything else. They don't see anything else. So I can forget my self-hatred. I can forget my self-alienation. If I concentrate on how much I love myself. But this is a bad kind of love, you see. It's not the right kind of love. If I concentrate on what? How great I am. If I concentrate on making other people see what? How great I am. You see. And therefore, my 24 hours a day, I'm obsessed by projecting my what? Greatness. But that greatness is coming out of what? hatred and inferiority. And since I'm greater than everyone else, I must make everyone else superior, in what? Inferior to me. In fact, I can only love people who attest to my superiority. I can only love a woman who 24 hours a day maintains my superior ego and states that she is in need of leadership and guidance. And I'm her leader. I may be emasculated in the world, but in my house, I'm the king. And at any moment she indicates that I have feet of clay, I shall use them to stomp her. Yeah, this is the kind of thing we have here. Yeah, and it goes the other way, too. You know, make me a goddess and lay at my feet all kinds of sacrifices. Yeah, yeah. Live through me. And any moment that you don't hold this up, I'm going to react with anger and call you all kinds of names and problems. That's the issue of narcissism. Then you have the phallic character. Flaunts his masculinity through success at work or conquest over women, constantly seeking confirmation of his potency. Identifies himself with his penis. Ultimately, though, ladies and gentlemen, this is a man who's afraid of castration, who really thinks his balls have already been cut out from under him. Therefore, he needs a constant confirmation that he has them. Kind of reminds me again of the black and white video. What was that boy trying to grab down there between his legs? What are so many black men grabbing at all the time out there? Yes, it's seeing if it's there. Yeah, where is it? In other words, then, that relationship can move into a master-slave kind of relationship, a relationship that tries to use and exploit other people, a relationship that, in a sense, duplicates the social relationship that the man has. Don't worry about it. It'll be all right. At the end, you have people then who have a problem with lovability and are in constant need of reassurance. So what does this all imply? We don't have time to go into it all. What does it all imply? What does it roll out to be? It means then that if we are to transform the relationship between black males and black females and transform the nature of black life, period, we must transform the American system itself. Yeah, you can't get around that. Oh yeah, we have to if we are going to say that living in America, being black in America, creates a good deal of the problems that we have, then we must change America as a part of changing what? The problems. Now, it doesn't mean that we focus outside of ourselves, because one of the best ways of changing America is by what means? Changing ourselves. I've told you before that we are not only the creation of whites, we also create them. That they cannot be what they are unless we are what we are. And therefore, if we engage in self-transformation, we engage in the transformation of the nation, and ultimately in the transformation of the world. This is what I'm saying again about an African-centered education, that more deeply than all, in terms of an African-centric education, is that we are not creating a revolution in America as much as we are creating a revolution in ourselves. But that revolution in ourselves is a revolution in America. And that's why we look at ourselves and transform ourselves. It means then that we must gain a perception of what is real. Maladaptive behaviors flow from the inability to operate in terms of what is real in the world. Where are we as African people? What is our real history? What is the real nature of this social system? And how does that reality intrude into our lives? We must come to know ourselves. If we do not know ourselves, we lose control of ourselves. We don't know why and for what reason we behave as we do. We must exercise control over ourselves. We must come to esteem ourselves and accept ourselves. To a good extent, the problems that we talk about all the time are problems that flow from people avoiding themselves, escaping their real selves, and creating mechanisms and machinations to facilitate their escape from themselves, and using other people and abusing other people in their escape from self-acceptance, in their escape from their real African selves as a people. And therefore, if we're going to stop abusing and using other people and using them as objects and so forth, then we must come back into self-acceptance and come back into reality. We must gain the ability to form affectionate relationships. And ladies and gentlemen, the ability to love and how to love is taught. In this system, we are taught that it's something that occurs accidentally and spontaneously. That is not true. Even romantic love, with all of its shivers up and down your spine, and all of this business about you can't eat and you can't sleep and, you know, you toss and turn all night.
I was just going to ask you about H.R. 40, what you hope the outcome is on that legislation and why you think it's important.
I think the more I educate about what the bill is, it's a commission to study the issue of what was the economic impact of the work of slaves and how does it translate into the 21st century. And what we want to do is to build a narrative, a story of the facts, and out of that to be able to assess how we repair some of the damage. When you look at urban blight, when you look at schools in inner cities and rural communities that are not at the level of excellence that they should be, when you look at support for HBCUs, all of that will be part of understanding that whole journey and that whole economic journey. And it is interesting that these magnificent buildings were built by slaves, obviously with no compensation. That is not what we are asking for. This bill is to have a commission to hear from people all over the nation.
So it'll be the beginning process?
Beginning process and an educational process for the nation in a non-controversial manner. And not in a manner of putting one group of people against another.
Because there have been some, even in Hollywood, like Danny Glover's called for reparations for Afro-descendants. Do you think that's something that needs to be done?
Well, we would love to have Danny Glover's been a strong supporter of H.R. 40, and we would love to have him as a witness providing his point of view. That's why this is such a great initiative and legislation.
Greetings, greetings, greetings. Welcome to another episode of Real Life. Brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. Brought to you on Black Talk Radio Network. Today is January the 15th, 2019. I am your host, Jenna, alongside my co-host, Brother Roz. I know you have a lot to get through tonight, so thank you for holding this down. How you doing tonight?
Hey. Peace. I'm glad to be here this evening with everybody. Thanks for tuning in with us tonight. Listen, we all got to do what we got to do, and we hold each other down. That's what we're supposed to do. So it is all good, and I'm looking forward to tonight. I wasn't expecting you to play those so early, but it's fine. We can spin back around to them when the you know, need arises in regards to addressing some of what was discussed, because Malcolm literally discussed the code that we all talk about, the code that we consistently talk about in regards to how Black people should deal with one another, especially in public spaces. Everything that we've said consistently for a number of years now, he just laid out in like a 6 or 7 minute clip. And we'll delve into some of that a little bit later, because it's going to come back up in the discussion. But I first want to just tackle some of the health stuff first, because I think it's quite important. And a couple of these are actually clips themselves. They're pretty short, but I think the information in them is priceless, and it's something that everyone who's listening should hear, because it will further help you understand certain things and why they're either beneficial or not beneficial. Let me see. Here we go. The first one, Jenna, is, where is it? It's the one that says, I knew sugar was bad, but this blew my mind.
Okay, let me.
It's like the second to last video before the Dr. Amos Wilson.
Doctor, let's talk about cancer a little bit. What, in your opinion, is the cause? I mean, there's many types of cancer, but what are the cause or causes?
All of us develop cancer cells every single day of our body.
Mm-hmm. And why is that?
It's a natural progression.
Okay.
We are replacing millions of cells in our mm-hmm. body every day. Some of those cells are going to be what they call neoplastic or abnormal cells. Some of those cells are going to be malignant. With a normally functioning immune system, the body is very capable of recognizing those cells, marking, tagging those cells, and then having other cells kill them and other cells engulf them and eliminate them. When that immune system is compromised, and there are several things that can compromise the immune system, then those cells are not targeted, and the cell growth becomes exponential and uncontrollable. So it's difficult to actually classify cancer as a disease because it's a naturally occurring in your body mm-hmm. every single day. It's the uncontrolled growth of these cells that goes unmonitored that's the problem.
So what are some of the things that cause it? What if it's an immune disorder, then basically, right? What in turn causes that?
One of the primary problems in the United States, believe it or not, I'll name two. Sugar and estradiol. Which is okay. one of 32 estrogens, but it's a primary estrogen. Let me go to sugar first. All cancer cells are the same, regardless of the type of cancer. Doesn't matter whether you have bladder cancer, prostate cancer, breast cancer, or mm-hmm. glioblastoma multiforme, form of brain cancer. All cancer cells eat sugar and excrete lactic acid. When they excrete lactic acid, the body becomes more acidic. As it becomes more acidic, the mm-hmm. liver moves more quickly to convert that lactic acid into glucagon, back into sugar. So you have a round robin. Mm-hmm. And the more advanced that the cancer becomes, the more your liver becomes working full-time for the cancer itself. Mm. So sugar is a direct food for all cancer cells. We here in the United States, all of us have a sweet tooth. It's genetic. You know, you can, every Native American, every Eskimo, every white man, European descent, all of us have this sweet tooth. And the reason for that is our bodies developed as hunter-gatherers. And anything that was sweet was high caloric, and we needed those mm-hmm. calories to survive. Mm-hmm. Well, the times have changed a little bit. Now we're the most obese society in the country, the United States, mm-hmm. and it's all because of that. What happens is we take in sugar. Our body then secretes insulin to reduce the sugar. We can go from heart attacks and a heartbeat just from that. We hear all of these drugs that are to lower cholesterol. Cholesterol does not cause arterial sclerosis. Never has, never will. Cholesterol actually circulates in your lymphatic system, which is part of your immune system. Cholesterol is the first step in making all of your hormones for your endocrine system. Cholesterol to DHEA, from DHEA, testosterone, or androstenedione, to testosterone, to your estrogens. As this becomes unbalanced, when we take in more sugar, we secrete more insulin. This insulin is what causes the problem. It causes lesions or cuts, tearing, in the endothelium of the arterial wall. It's in these lesions that cholesterol will collect.
Because it's a repair mechanism.
It's a repair mechanism. So if we weren't taking in huge amounts of sugar, you'd never see these heart attacks. I have a very close friend that's an internist. He's in his 80s now, but he served a long period of time dealing with elderly in their 80s in that were in a home, nursing home. Mm-hmm. Not because they were ill, these were just more retirement homes. Mm-hmm. And he was their physician. He never found cholesterol levels under 250 in anyone over the age of 80. It wasn't the cholesterol that was ever causing the problem. It was the sugar intake. And now all of our food has sugar in it. So we see rising levels of this heart disease and rising selling of statin drugs when it's much simpler just to cut sugar out of your diet. I say that. It's not really that simple. But if you could cut sugar out, it would reduce cancer rates and cardiovascular incidents probably by 90%.
Okay, Ross. That that goes right into Raj, you there?
Yeah, I'm listening to you.
Oh, okay. That goes right into what we're talking about tonight with the hustle.
Absolutely. Yeah, it does, because, I mean, I remember being a child growing up in Brooklyn, and first thing in the morning, there was candy stores along the way. So we would purposely pass them. They had video, you know, arcade machines in the back, and then they had like a plethora of candy. So everybody would get their favorite candy, and you're talking 7-8 in the morning, people tossing candy in their mouth. And we're all children. And
the candy later.
Go ahead. Say it again.
The candy later. Where I'm from.
Yeah. And without question, this, especially in Black communities, easy access to candy and sweets and sugar is what fuels a lot of the health problems in the community. And that's why I wanted everyone to hear that, because he was dealing with sugar and how toxic it is. When you really get into sugar, there's a great book called Sugar Blues. I think if everyone was to get that book, it's very small. It's about the size of the average Donald Goins book, maybe like 200 pages and change, if that. And it's a small book, but it's going to blow your mind about what sugar does to the body and how you can transform your life by nixing as much sugar out of your life as you possibly can if it's not natural, as far as like eating fruits and vegetables or dealing with honey and sometimes maybe using
the processed stuff
like that.
Getting rid of the process.
Exactly, because sugar is actually considered the most potent drug on the planet. It's more powerful than heroin. It's more powerful than methamphetamine. It's more powerful than cocaine. It is the ultimate drug, and everybody has access to it. Everybody wants it. And that's what makes it so deadly, is that it's such easy access. You're easily addicted to it. And like he said, it's absolutely true. Coming from hunter-gatherer community, one of the most important things you could get your hands on was something sugary, because it gave you an extra burst of energy. And when you start to study even in nature, you have certain tribes in Kenya and in other parts of that eastern central region where they have relationships with a bird that's known as a honey god. And the honey god and those particular groups call each other. So the bird will go seeking people when it needs them, or they will go seeking the bird if they're looking for a beehive and need assistance. And what happens is the bird basically guides them to the beehive. They in turn get the honey, And then they leave the honeycomb for the bird, because that's what the bird likes most of all, is the honeycomb. So they actually take the honey and leave the honeycomb for the bird to enjoy at its leisure. And this has been like thousands of years. This relationship is what it is between this natural wild bird and these particular African ethnic groups. That's how important sugar is in parts of the continent, depending on where different ethnic groups are located. And the thing is, in this, I just think he really brings it home about sugar and the damage it does, even in relation to heart disease, and takes cholesterol and puts it in its proper context. So I thought it was really good, and that's why I thought it was quite important to touch on that. There's another one. I'm not really going to get into the video, but it's in the thread, and it basically deals with the fact it's entitled Doctors Use These Toxins on You, but they do not use them on themselves or their family. And basically the guy is going into the doctor. He's actually talking about the fact that the toxins that you are given in chemotherapy are so deadly that they did a study, and over 90 something percent of the doctors that they interviewed said that they would never use chemotherapy themselves or have it done on their family members because they understand how deadly it is. But yet, a lot of us have our relatives that I just lost my uncle years ago to that same thing. And the first thing they'll tell you is chemo. And then on top of that, they don't tell people about silver chemo. Silver chemo is non-toxic to the human body, yet it kills cancer cells. We've dealt with that, the fact that silver is a known cancer destroyer in earlier programs. And you have two types of chemo you can get, platinum-based, and platinum-based basically brings any organism as close to death as possible in the hopes that the toxicity will kill the bad cells, the cancer cells, because cancer cells basically are cells that don't have a death program. And all cancer cells are white, ironically. But ultimately, what it is that they're hoping to bring you as close to death as possible to kill off the cancer cells, and then you as the living organism will recover. It kills both good and bad cells with platinum. With silver, it only kills the bad cells and does absolutely nothing to good cells. So I just thought that was very important, because if they're telling you that the same doctors who would tell you or your relative this is what you need to do are not willing to take the same treatments that they prescribe to millions of people every year, then it should really tell you something in regards to the hustle and the way that they profit off of the most deadly forms of illness that can befall you is what you're dealing with. That's the medical system that you're dealing with. And it's something that you want to be very, very careful of and try and do as much as possible to live as healthy a life as possible so you do not end up in their hands. Another thing you do not want to do, especially if you're Black, is become an organ donor. Because, I mean, I posted a bunch of videos on BTR Community in the last like week to 2 weeks dealing with all the different ways that they steal organs. And with Black people, if you ever end up in an accident and you have a do not resuscitate order, they will let you die so they can steal your organs. Like that's, I mean, especially if you're a donor and you have a do not resuscitate order, don't think they're going to try and save your life. They're going to, let them go. They'll literally just start prepping your organs to be taken the moment that you pass away. And in some cases, they've been known to paralyze people and steal their organs while they're still alive. And it's documented. I actually put the videos on BTR Community because it was mind-blowing what I was seeing. And what's happening in China, there's no words for it. It's literally organ theft genocide going on in China. That's the only way I could describe it with the research that I'm coming across. It is not a game. So, yeah, that was one, dealing with cancer pretty much. The first one was dealing with cancer. This one is dealing with chemotherapy. And I think there's one more. Oh, there it is. The other one. Oh yeah. The other one is the 5G one, the RT one.
Okay. I got you.
Okay. Thanks.
Polly Boyko reporting to us there from the Thames. So what's the next big thing, by the way? It's called 5G. Have you heard of it? Everybody's talking about it. Frankly, I'm not the techiest guy in the world, so I actually had to Google it this afternoon to find out more about what 5G, what is 5G? So I I looked at Wikipedia, and here's what I found out that Wikipedia says. 5G, according to Wikipedia, is the latest generation of cellular communications targeting high data rates, reduced latency, energy savings, cost reductions, higher system capacity, and massive connectivity. There you go. A bunch of big words that may mean something to you, maybe not. But it does sound impressive, right? Who wouldn't want all of that? Well, some might ask, there's got to be a catch. So joining us now is our correspondent, Michelle Greenstein, with the latest on 5G. And I guess the question would be then, here's the setup, ba-dum-bum, is there a catch?
There is, just a small one. It might kill you.
Good to know.
So you'll find...
How so?
Well, a few days ago, actually, a group of scientists, doctors, environmental organizers, and concerned citizens got together, and they called for the urgent stop to the deployment of 5G. They said that it's been proven harmful to human bodies, that this is an experiment on humanity, and that this should be called a crime under international law. Let's talk about today's technology, what we have going on today. Your phone is constantly sending electromagnetic fields in and out of each other. Whether or not you're receiving a notification right now, all of our digital tech sends this data back and forth, right, using these invisible microwave radiation signals, aka radio frequency radiation.
Right. Uh-huh.
That's today's tech. We have every cell tower, every router constantly pulsing with radiation, whether or not you're using it. Science shows that this causes DNA damage, cancer, among other things. But don't take my word for it.
And that's just with 4G.
That's just with today's technology.
Before
Correct.
We get to 5G, right now you got some of it, but
exactly.
not that much.
Let's listen to what Dr. Sharon Goldberg has to say. She's a clinical researcher and an internal medicine physician. This is what she has to say about what we're using today.
Wireless radiation has biological effects, period. This is no longer a subject for debate when you look at PubMed and the peer-reviewed literature. These effects are seen in all life forms, plants, animals, insects, microbes. In humans, we have clear evidence of cancer now. There is no question. We have evidence of DNA damage, cardiomyopathy, which is the precursor of congestive heart failure, neuropsychiatric effects.
So if 4G is already doing some of this, and I imagine if somebody walks around all day with their phone next to their head for hours upon end, they might be doing some damage to themselves. But let's get beyond 4G.
Right.
How much more potentially dangerous will 5G be, and why?
Well, here's what's really dangerous about 5G. I mean, it's being sold to us as super awesome. You know, your toaster can talk to your door lock. It could talk to your self-driving car. Like, you have a thermostat in your home that knows when you're home. You have these smart homes. Like, it just really sold to us as being awesome. But the downside is that with this rollout, it will be impossible to exist in a city or to walk outside without being exposed. There's going to be a cell tower in front of every few houses, and this means that your personal choices, whether or not you personally use a cell phone or hold it 10 inches away from your head, that cannot escape you from your radiation exposure. So let's listen to what Dr. David Carpenter, another public health physician and actually a signatory to this international appeal, had to say. I asked him about the safety testing that's been done with this 5G rollout.
Okay.
There's been no safety testing of 5G. The reason I think that it's dangerous is that there isn't any specific information to 5G, but we know that radio frequency radiation of 3G and 4G are associated with a whole variety of different human health effects. Everyone is going to be exposed to radio frequency radiation more continuously and at higher intensities, and that's going to cause more human disease.
So if I was your big brother, or your dad, and you're being a little younger than me and probably have a little more awareness of this stuff, and I asked you,
sure.
So when you describe 5G, for those in the audience that maybe don't understand it, it's like this Alexa thing that's being sold to us. It's this thing in our homes where, as
on
you said, our toaster's talking to our phone, and our phone is talking to...
The Internet of Things, right?
So,
I mean, if you go online and Google Internet of Things, it's just like utopian
Everything
vision.
Is connected, right?
Everything, yeah. Sounds super amazing.
That's what 5G will eventually hope to become.
Exactly.
And you're saying... It's too much. It's too omnipresent.
Well, I'm saying that there should at least be a public debate about the health effects. And the fact is, the government is completely not jumping on the ball. I mean, because of the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which says that no state or local government can regulate the placement of any cell towers regardless of environmental effects,
right.
That has really laid, there it is right there, that has really laid the groundwork for this toxic infrastructure.
What is that we're looking at? I mean,
this is the Telecommunications Act of 1996.
It's long. Why am I reading it?
This basically says that regardless of health effects, you cannot stop the deployment of 5G infrastructure. And the FCC, you know, which has no health expertise itself, is completely captured by the wireless industry. It's the same playbook that big oil use with climate change or big tobacco with cigarettes. You know, they're really deceiving the public and selling this to us as something that doesn't have a lot of risks. But you know who hasn't been fooled? The insurance companies. They are not selling any product liability policies that cover cell phone radiation because they aren't fooled by these studies. And look, when people like find reports, when usually like when you or I go online and find reports about wireless tech to find that it's harmless or that there's no evidence of harm, we're usually looking at industry-sponsored studies.
Yeah. And it's not a question about whether we don't want to move toward new technology. We just want to make sure that that new technology is tested before we put it out there.
So
good stuff. Hey, Michelle, as usual, good stuff.
Thank you.
Good report.
Hold up. This, what it said was no state or local government or indiscriminately thereof may regulate the placement, construction, and modification of personal wireless service facilities on the basis of the environmental effects of radio frequency emissions to the extent that such facilities comply with the Commission's regulations concerning such emissions. That's what he didn't have her to read.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this 5G stuff, they've been doing studies on this for years now, and there's a lot of protests, not just here but planetarily. These devices kill bees. In some areas, they're killing birds, like millions of birds. It's really crazy. So it's not just people that is having this detrimental effect on. It's also on the environment. And like she said, it ties into the whole Internet of Things. Basically, everything on the planet is supposed to have some sort of SKU number that is in the system where they can tell where everything is at all times. That's part of, remember last year we dealt with the satellite constellations?
Yeah.
Where the different companies were putting like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of satellites up in the air, and it's meant to communicate with 5G cells, both underwater and on land and in the tundra, if it's in a cold place like the Arctic, and basically allow you to geolocate no matter where on the planet you may be. There are going to be so many of these different cell receivers and generators all over the planet, and then you have these satellite constellations that are in constant communication. So no matter where you are on the planet, you should be able to, as long as your phone is working, geolocate yourself so you would never be lost. They'll be able to always find you. They'll also be able to find everything else, all the wildlife, all the resources. From what I understand, they were doing special radar checks in parts of Africa where they can actually tell all of the different, like exactly how much of specific minerals and precious or semi-precious gemstones are in the areas where they're prevalent in the continent. And they were claiming that they were going to eventually map the entire planet so that every continent, whatever they have of value, will be basically a part of the Internet of Things. So this is how big this whole thing that they're planning is pretty much. I would say everyone should have a diode on their cell phone. A diode is a device made up of different crystals, and these crystals basically mitigate electromagnetic frequencies or EMFs and make those waves harmless so that as your phone is communicating with a cell tower and the cell tower is communicating with your cell phone and all the other things that your phone does that causes it to generate this radiation, it mitigates it and makes it completely harmless so that you can, you know, put it on your ear if you don't have a headset and not worry about brain cancer. You can sit it in your shirt pocket and not worry about breast cancer, or in your pants pocket and not worry about testicular or ovarian cancer. So that's what it does. It mitigates it and protects you from the harmful impact of the rays coming, the waves coming to and from your phone, because it's also microwave energy too. And of course, we know what microwaves do. They cook on a molecular level. The difference is because we have melanin, that's an extra layer of protection. But the type of stuff they're building, melanin is not going to be enough, because this 5G stuff is really powerful. And they had 10G since the 90s. So don't think that this is some brand new thing that they're just coming out with. They've already had this mapped out probably to like 40 or 50G by now. And they're just choosing to release quote unquote 5G. And you heard what 3 and 4G was medically capable of doing to the human organism, as they said in the video. And now just up that about 1,000 times and you have 5G. So it's just something I think everyone should do, is get into getting Orgon. Orgon mitigates electromagnetic frequencies. There's all kinds of different experiments people have done on YouTube where they actually have used a meter that reads electromagnetic frequencies. They've put Orgon in the room, and the electromagnetic frequency, the meter doesn't read anything because it mitigates it. So it's not something I'm just making up. It's something you can actually look up all over YouTube. People have done videos, and also Orgon is known to dissipate and remove chemtrails. There's video footage of that as well. So, Orgon and the stones that you want to look into would be black tourmaline, shungite, amazonite, citrine, certain forms of tiger eye. I'm trying to think, what are some of the other ones?
Man, that's enough. Nah, I was saying that's enough. We know it's so many more.
So
blew my mind.
All right, so let me just go on to the rest of these little health ones I wanted to touch on. So this one is this is from healthyholisticliving.com, and it's entitled Ancient Ginger Garlic Soup Recipe Fights the Flu, Common Cold, Excess Mucus, and Sinus Infection. So basically it's a recipe for an ancient tea, and they go into the benefits of garlic, and garlic is known to regulate high blood pressure, fight allergies, diminish plaque from the arteries, regulate blood sugar levels, expel parasites, reduce inflammation, help to prevent weight gain. It treats a sore throat and soothes upper respiratory tract infection. Wow, that was a mouthful. So that's just a few of the things that it does. And this is based on science pretty much. And they go into that in the article. And then they get into the benefits of ginger as well, which I know it too, because it's great for shutting down mucus production in the body. It's also been used for centuries to cure colds, fevers, digestive issues, and other conditions. It is also a potent anti-inflammatory, effective in soothing arthritis. Many studies have proven its effectiveness in treating nausea and vomiting as well. And many studies prove ginger has to have high antioxidant, antimicrobial, and antifungal properties, which are helpful when curing cold and flu symptoms. So they give you the ingredients and the entire recipe on how to use it. I would say for folks to get into that, because it can help you. This is cold and flu season. I remember I talked about the other article we dealt with in another program where they discussed the fact that pineapple is 500 times more powerful than cough syrup in stopping a cough. And they give a recipe using pineapple and a few other different herbs and stuff that you can use if you have a cold or flu, and it'll shut down your cough so that you don't have to worry about ripping up your throat and you're having chest spasms and all kinds of stuff like that. So, so that's one. You can find the one I just dealt with in the Real Life, the radio show thread for tonight's program. So I just wanted to let everyone know that. Let me go to the next one. I think I'm almost through them all. Why oregano oil is one of the greatest things you can own. And this is from wisemindhealthybody.com. And yes, it is so versatile and such a powerful herb that I think everyone should have oil of oregano in their medicinal arsenal. So it says oregano oil is the ultimate antibiotic. Oregano is a powerful herb with unique healing properties. Did you know that oregano has 8 times more antioxidants than apples and 3 times as much as blueberries? Antioxidants are needed to protect our body against free radical damage, which are basically cancer cells. They boost the immune system naturally. Oregano oil is the most potent plant in the world. Distribution of oregano oil started in ancient Greece. In Greek, the word oregano translated as joy of the mountains. Greeks were the first to use the oil for medicinal purposes, such as powerful antiviral, antibacterial, antiseptic, antifungal agent, and also as a remedy for pain and inflammation. It was the main antibacterial tool used by Hippocrates. Oregano leaves were traditionally used to treat illness related to the respiratory and digestive system. So let me see what else. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I just want to pick out what's meaty here. Okay, so yeah, it's one of those things you can actually use in food to get a healthy dose of it all the time. So they're saying that oregano essential oil has high mineral density. It contains calcium, magnesium, zinc, iron, potassium, copper, boron, manganese, vitamin C, vitamin A, and niacin in extremely high concentration. So yeah, we're gonna end it there with that. But if you don't have oregano oil, it's something you should use. It can definitely help you with colds and flus, dealing with respiratory issues, and basically cleaning, because it kills just about everything as far as infections and antifungal and all the other stuff, antimicrobial and so on and so forth. So it's something you definitely want to have and utilize it regularly, and take it as much as you possibly can. I think it would be really, really beneficial, I would say. So let's get into the rest of the show now. I think I'm pretty much done with that.
Take us right on into the break early, and we can start from there.
All right. Thanks for joining us tonight. You are listening to Real Life, the radio show with myself, Ross, and my co-host, Jenna Kepra, on Black Talk Radio Network via Foundational Radio with myself again and my partner, Jenna Kepra. If you do wish to call in, please give us a call. At 804-702-5056. That's 804-702-5056. Press ** if you wish to ask a question or make a comment, and please watch your background notice.
So with that, I agree with both of those last two videos.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we had done discussed both of those again. Well, excuse me, not the with the oregano, but with the 5G. You know, we addressed that for quite some time. Like you said, it's still a lot worse technology they got. So, you know,
down the road.
Down the road. Weakening us up first. And we're seeing a lot of that across the globe here lately.
Oh yeah, there's a lot happening simultaneously, and now you got Bill Gates planning to try and block out the sun to make it more conducive to basically white people's survival, because that's the environment they came from, a cold environment where they did not have access to a lot of sun. So that's pretty much what he's discussing doing, and from what I understand, he's going forward with that as well. So we'll see how that develops as the year goes, and if there's enough protest to maybe stop it from happening, but we just have to wait and see. Oh yeah, something else too. This one's from USA Today. This one is Oral-B guide floss is tied to potentially toxic PFA chemicals, a study suggests. So they're finding that these is polyfluoroalkyl substances, and that they're used for their water and grease resistance in the floss, dental floss, but they're finding it in people's bodies now, and it's highly toxic. Mm. So something else that's supposed to be for your benefit, Oral-B floss, is tied to this PFAS chemical, and of course they're going to find it in breast milk. So you know, if a woman is breastfeeding her child and she has that in her system, as well as BPAs, which is the effeminizing chemicals found in plastics, she'll be feeding that to her child and might genetically alter her child. That's why we say a lot of this epidemic, homosexuality and stuff, is coming from people being genetically and chemically altered. There's so many toxic things or containers that we use that it's ridiculous. So that's one of them, is that pretty much OLB, Thiophos, is tied to PFAs. There's another one that deals with CBD, a potential therapeutic for cardiovascular disease. Really good article. I'm not going to go into it too heavy, but it basically deals with the fact that CBD is known to actually help repair the cardiovascular system, so and reduce inflammation, which is basically the major cause of heart disease is inflammation. Well, just about all diseases, like Dr. Sadie used to say, it's inflammation and mucus. He would talk about that as well as the other major thing. But yeah, inflammation and CBD works wonders for that. And the article deals with that in quite a thorough manner. So I just wanted to put that out there. And it's in the thread as well on Real Life, the radio show. And then there's one more. There's a neuroscientist that drinks a particular tonic to prevent Alzheimer's. And it's something that she came up with. I believe she was like genetically predisposed. And as a result, her being the doctor that she is, she came up with this and she does it every day. And I put it in the thread. So if anyone wants to look into it, it basically has like a peeled orange, a small carrot, half a beet, one tablespoon of grated ginger, and something else. My page just flipped on me. So, yeah, but it's something that she takes every day to prevent Alzheimer's, which is actually good. So if anyone else has any close family members that have suffered from that or potentially passed away from that disease, then it doesn't mean that you'll actually get it, but it might mean that you might have a genetic predisposition to potentially getting it if you not live the proper lifestyle as far as eating is concerned, eating a lot of sugar, gluten, anything that inflames the body or inflames the nervous system, then that will leave you open to, you know, be a potential candidate for that. So yeah, that's another one. I think that's pretty much it with that. That's it. So now we're going to get into the program now.
The videos threw you off.
Oh, yeah, a little bit, but I wasn't expecting them to be played at when they were, but it's fine. It's not a problem. We can still do what we need to do. So first I want to get into, because we have a much bigger homosexual black community than we've ever had in our history in this hemisphere. And I just want to say first, I have nothing against any of them at all. You live your life however you see fit, and it has no bearing on the way that I live my life. So I have no problem with you doing whatever you see fit that's best for you. That's first thing right off the top. Now, a lot of the black homosexual community, because of the way propaganda has worked and because of the quick rise, because it basically took like 40 years for homosexuals to get rights that black people have been fighting for 500 years. And in this time frame, there's been a lot of black people from the homosexual community that have, of course, been a part of that movement. But what has also happened, too, is when you look at homosexuals like Langston Hughes, or you look at homosexuals like James Baldwin, and you look at their writing, you look at their work, you watch like James Baldwin, they have him on many recordings dealing with the issues of being an American African and his experience of white racism and brutality surrounding his race. They were not confused about anything to do with their sexuality. They understood that they were being assaulted, mistreated, abused, and potentially could have been killed because they were black. What we find today is the opposite. A lot of black homosexuals tend to put their sexuality over their race, and they tend to side against other black people because, of course, in some cases they might have been mistreated or called out of their name or maybe even potentially assaulted, which I don't think it really has ever really been a major issue in the black community, because I remember Neely Fuller talking about that as well, that there wasn't any sort of wholesale anti-gay sentiment in the black community. Pretty much they were accepted. They, you know, were left to their own devices for the most part, and maybe in a one-off situation they might come across someone who, you know, might say something, but it wasn't like they were being terrorized and harassed. So what you're finding is a lot of the young folks tend to put their sexual orientation above their race. And, you know, I've definitely heard black gay males say, and including my wife's best friend is homosexual. So the fact that white homosexuals are no less racist than regular white people, but yet a lot of times black homosexuals become more confused about the race issue because white folks try to make everything focus around the sexual orientation. And then all of a sudden, if the white black person has never experienced racism in that way, they'll get it. And then it's like, oh, but I thought we were. And then they're like, no, you're not white. So this has been the experience. And there's a lot of history that the black homosexual community does not have around homosexuality itself and the fact that it was used as a weapon. It was not something that was considered this wonderful lifestyle unless you're talking about grief. And we'll touch on that. I'm going to read a little piece of some information from an essay just to bring some stuff home about that, because a lot of some homosexuals might know about grief, but they don't really understand the intimacies of how that stuff works. And it's really, really telling when you start to compare it to some of the stuff we see happening today. But anyway, Jenna had found this article that I thought was quite fascinating from The Blaze. And it's entitled Trans Kids Site Sells Fake Penises for Girls Who Identify as Boys, and they're called Packers. So this is a website that if you have a young child who's a female and she identifies as a male, she can go to this site and get a fake penis and give the impression that she's actually a boy via having a quote-unquote package. So now this is indoctrinating children who haven't possibly gone through puberty. So they might have been questioning their sexuality just because that's what young people do until you get to that age where puberty kicks in. And that's when you start to figure out. You still don't know, because the brain doesn't stop developing until a person is 26 years old. So ultimately, you're still figuring it out, but you start to lean in a specific direction as you get into your teens and your upper teens into your early 20s. But when you have, and I believe in Canada, they have like a law where if your child tells you, and it could be like a six-year-old, and they tell you that they are the opposite sex of from what they were born, and if the parent doesn't call them by the gender proper pronoun, they can actually be removed from the house. I was looking at that like a year ago. I don't know if it went through, but there was legislation going in that direction where like the parents had to call the child, like if it was Jenny when it was born and it wants to be Billy, they have to call him and treat the person as what they want to be called. It's really the craziest thing when you're trying to legally regulate people's speech, but it's getting to that point now, that point of real ridiculousness and stupidity. Mm. But yeah, so this is the indoctrination process where you have these children who haven't even gone through puberty and they're being sold this stuff. In some of the schools, you have elementary schools in some cases teaching young children what homosexual sex is. So you might send your child to public school and have no idea. Like a month or two ago, I posted an article on BTR Community where an elderly black male went to his grandson's school and went off on the staff because for 2 days straight, they put him in a dress. And this was a kindergarten class, if I remember correctly. If it wasn't kindergarten, it was first grade. And basically the teacher's response to him was, we don't really care what you have to say. We're going to do what we want with your grandson. And he was livid and said, you're not going to put a dress on my grandson again. We don't do that in my family. He said, you know, he wasn't anti-gay. He was just like, look, we don't deal with that type of stuff in my family. Do not do it to my grandson. And her whole attitude was like, we really don't care. We're going to do what we want anyway. There was another school that I read about in the first grade. They were having the boys put on nail polish and all kinds of effeminizing behavior. This is in the classroom. So you don't know what your child is going to school and getting. And you might have your child come home first, second grade and tell you, you know, mommy, I don't want to be a boy no more. I want to be Cindy now. And you don't have no idea that they're getting it in class.
Yeah.
Because they're saying this is a viable form of sexual activity and this is a lifestyle now.
So your child is being manufactured.
Exactly. But they're getting it. They're being taught stuff that would be considered child abuse or child pornography 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's probably not the most interesting part, but I guess it will be the most sinister that people, as I start getting introduced to different people, you find that people have been talking about this forever. And we still somehow fall into the same trap. Kind of goes into the videos and the title of the show. You know, the hustle of white supremacy.
Without question. And it really ties into, like I said, when you start to understand that, you know, the history of African contact with homosexuality, especially as espoused and practiced by Europeans, was used as a tool of warfare. When you study the Vikings, you'll start to see that one of their main practices, if they conquered a people, was to wholesale rape the male. And it basically effeminized them, and it made them no longer men in the eyes of their women. So it was one of the most thorough ways of psychologically dominating a people, was to go and do that. And I've said this before, there's only two living things, and I've studied animals since I was like 4 or 5 years old till now. I make that a part of my spiritual practice and have for decades. It is something I'm intimately aware of. There's only two creatures I know that go after the sexual organs of another male of the same species. That is chimpanzees, and they're known to rip the testicles off of other males when they attack another group and throw them. And white people. They are known to fixate on the genitals of black males and remove them and sometimes eat them or keep them as trophies. Those are the only two living things, both happen to be primates, that focus on the genital destruction of males of the same species. That's a lot to think about. And the crazy part is when you shave the hair off of a chimp, their skin is white. They don't need melanin because their hair provides adequate protection from the sun. So when you shave the hair off of a chimpanzee, you'll find that their skin is actually white, not dark. When you look at a mountain gorilla, their skin is also white. You'll only find that their hands, their feet, and their faces, everything that's non-covered with hair, is what's heavily melanated. The opposite is with a polar bear. Polar bear skin is black, and their hair is actually white. And that's to keep them as warm as possible in the Arctic environment, so they absorb as much sun as possible via that pitch black skin. So if you shave the skin, the fur off of a polar bear, you'll find that his skin is heavily melanated and he's a black bear.
Man, those are some awesome random facts right there.
So yeah, let me get into this just to give people an understanding. Now, a lot of times people have, and I've heard this my whole life being from the Caribbean as well. When I got here, I used to hear a lot of Americans say this, that Jamaicans were the most homophobic people that they had ever seen. And for the most part, Africans in general, black people in general were considered. And the funny part is, especially in America, there was no wholesale hatred or assault of homosexuals at all. I know in Jamaica it has happened, but there's a historical reason for their vehement disdain for it. And in the last year, I've been hearing this term come up a lot. It's called buck breaking. But most people don't know what buck breaking is. And this is
Say this last year?
Within the last year, I've been hearing more and more people talking about that, like on YouTube and different things. I'm hearing more and more people talking about it than I've heard in years past. But most people don't know what it means and how it works. So I'm going to just use this article. It's from NubianPlanet.com, and it's called Buck Breaking, the Heinous Act Purposely Erased from History. And this ties in with The Delectable Negro and Dr. Tommy Curry's book, The Man Not. So it says, black men were routinely raped by their gay slave owners. The process was known as breaking the buck. It involves perhaps the most heinous and atrocious acts known to man. Buck breaking was so successful that it was made into a quote-unquote sex farm, where white men could travel from plantation to plantation, feeding their sadistic homosexual needs. This excerpt was taken from Hidden Colors 4, The Religion of White Supremacy. A strapping buck slave who was defiant and may stir up trouble was beaten with a whip until bloody in front of his entire slave congregation. The slave owner, deathly afraid of an uprising, would cut down a tree, and with the help of the overseer would then pummel the deviant quote-unquote buck into submission. Once the slave was worn down, the white master had other slaves force him over the tree stump where his breeches would be removed, and he lay fully exposed before the slave owner sodomized him. What came next was a cause for fear and terror to ripple through every slave plantation across the plantation. The master, drunk on bloodlust, would explain to all strong young black men that if they do not follow strict orders and comply with the whims of the overseer and the master, this too would be their fate. He removed his own clothing and proceeded to savagely sodomize the buck in front of his wife, family, friends, and children. He then invited his associates from other plantations to join in the quote-unquote nigger festivities. For this plan to take effect, he would require the buck's male child to watch front row in the center so he too could witness his father's sexual demise and humiliation. Buck breaking was the slave master's very effective tool to keep all young black slaves from ever being defiant and taking revenge. It also frightened the mothers and wives from ever giving consent to an uprising. If there was ever any doubt that the white race is our mortal enemy, please remove all doubt and see the truth for what it is. And they just go into explaining history. So he says, did you know, he says, here it goes. Have you ever wondered how it's possible that so many black people yearn for whiteness in spite of a brutal history to the contrary? Do you know that during slavery in the U.S., gay white slaveholders would buy male slaves to engage in forced homosexual acts? These male slaves were purchased based entirely on the prerequisite of them possessing a large penis. So they're telling you that there was a system. And this is why when Dr. Tommy Curry was on the Cows and he talked about the fact that The Delectable Negro was groundbreaking, because it's the only book of its type that discusses the wholesale rape of black males. We only hear about the rape of black women. But there was a serious, serious underground that is, the information is there, but no one wanted to touch the subject until Vincent Woodard decided to, who happened to be a gay black male. And he died before the book was done. So his colleagues, most of them black, facilitated completing the book after he passed away. But it's the only book of its kind that deals with the rape of black males and the consumption of black males. And this is basically telling you that some of the stuff that we hear colloquially about black males having big members and those stereotypes and things like that were exactly what some of these homosexual slave masters were interested in. And I just read to you what they would do and make sure that their male child or children were front and center. So this was the reason that you found such a vehement disdain for homosexuality in Jamaica. Jamaica was one of the main seasoning plantations where they would ship what they call recalcitrant Negroes, which were basically slaves that they couldn't break. Those of the revolutionary type, the ones that did not stand for any mess from NASA, they would be shipped to places like Jamaica, and there's other islands, Trinidad, there's all those islands were used pretty much as slave seasoning plantations. Barbados was another one. And then once they broke the buck, they would send them back to the United States. So they were specifically sent to the islands to have these things done to them, and then they would ship them back, and they would be so broken, they would never have to worry about them being, you know, being troublesome on the plantation. So now you get an understanding for the psychology of how homosexuality is used historically as a weapon. Now it's being weaponized in the form of genetic and chemical castration and alteration of the human species, which is why we're seeing such an epidemic amount of this happening that we did not see back in the day. And I remember it was Dr. Welsing who said, as a doctor, you're also an investigator. And she used autism as her example. She said back when she was doing her residency, which was, I believe, in 70, 71, I believe she was at Johns Hopkins University, if I remember correctly. I could be wrong. And she said that in the hospital, there was one white, blonde-haired, blue-eyed autistic child. And she said that child was almost like a zoo animal because no one had ever seen an autistic child. It was such a rare illness that literally doctors would come from all over the country just to see this autistic boy and to do studies on him because there just weren't that many of them. And then she said, fast forward to now, the 90s and 2000s, you have epidemic autism. She said, well, what has changed either in the things that we're eating or something that we're doing medically that is causing this epidemic autism? She just put that question out there, and then she compared it to homosexuality. She said there was no, you know, she said black people always had a few homosexuals in our community. They were never really bothered or tampered with. For the most part, they did their thing. you know, and that was it. They were pretty much left alone, like I said, unless they had a rare run-in with somebody who would be nasty to them. So they were pretty much doing their thing and left to their own devices. They weren't bothered. She said, now, fast forward, you have all of this epidemic, you know, lesbianism and homosexuality. Where is it coming from? And then when you start to get into atrazine and you get into BPA and you get into all those different things, those chemicals and whatnot, that change. And matter of fact, there was a study I talked about this past summer where they had white male twins. And they were identical twins. So they came from the same sperm and same egg. They weren't fraternal. And what happened was they found that one twin was gay and the other one was straight. And they were trying to figure out, because they were identical twins, why both of them weren't gay or both of them weren't straight. Why was one gay? Why was one straight? When they did the research, they found that the gay child had an epigenetic change take place while gestating in his mother's womb that made him homosexual. So in that 9-month period after the sperm met the egg, something happened in that in its mother, or it came in contact with something in its mother's body that genetically altered one twin, and the other twin did not have come into contact with that. Because remember, epigenetics has to do with how the environment affects and changes the genes of an organism. So something in the environment of its mother's womb triggered that twin to genetically alter and come out gay, and his brother did not. And there is the actual proof that they're genetically and chemically altering humans.
Well, you have been talking about that. I remember you first brought that up about 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. The reason I'm talking about it tonight is... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I was just going to say the following effects of the epigenetics. But go ahead. Go ahead. Continue.
Oh, no, I was just saying that what I wanted, the reason I wanted to go into this is because no different than feminism was a CIA psyop, that was black feminism specifically, that was created via Gloria Steinem. When she was in college, she was given $2 million by the CIA to facilitate and create black feminism. And she connected to this woman, Michelle, I forget her last name, and through this woman wrote the first black feminist book was published, and the whole idea was to destroy the black family by turning the black woman against the black male, and to make the black woman believe that the biggest problem to the black woman's upward mobility in society was the black male, and that his toxic masculinity was so horrific that she needed to no longer need a man, go out there and do her own thing, and maybe find herself a good woman while she was at it. And what you found was, this was all during the 60s, the free love and all of that. That's when you started to see the beginnings of rampant lesbianism amongst black women, and it started on the college campus because that's where Gloria Steinem was. And remember, the college campus was also where the drug culture was. And if you watch Hidden Colors 1, they go into the use of chemicals to facilitate homosexual activity that actually facilitated the beginning of the AIDS epidemic. They go into that in minute detail in the most powerful way. So it's something you want to see. Now, what I also wanted to touch on was, there was an essay that I wrote that dealt with white supremacy, and there was a section of it that dealt with something called, was actually a section deals with the origins of the term gymnasium and how it relates to the weaponization of homosexuality, and this is actually dealing specifically with Greece itself. And it's very, very incredible. I'm just going to take sections out of it that's important. I'm not going to read the whole thing because I don't think it's actually necessary to do it. But I think the sections that I read will pretty much bring home what I'm just, you know, trying to deal with in regards to this, the hustle of black homosexuals against their own best interest. So this is the origin of the term gymnasium. And it says the origin is Latin, meaning exercise, ground, school. From Greek, gymnasium. From gymnasium, to exercise naked. From gymnos, naked. The second definition for narcissist is love, or love of sexual desire for one's own body. Greece and Rome were white societies that were known for pederasty, something that modern humans would call one of the worst forms of child abuse and sexual terrorism, and it was accepted as a way of life and was highly encouraged in the society. Greeks did not care for the psychosexual welfare of their youth. They promoted what was essentially child rape as normal and healthy. Men in Greece culturally were known to have sex with females mainly for procreation only, yet they reserved their most impassioned quote-unquote lovemaking, or sodomy slash rape, for other men, and more particularly boys they met in bathhouses. For Greeks, homosexuality and pederasty went hand in hand as normal behavior. As we will later see, they even believed homosexuals were closer to the gods than heterosexuals, which is actually very true. So I'm just going to get into this here. Here we go.
You found
it? Yeah, I'm actually looking it up right now. Okay, so it says the secret of, this is actually a section of, I believe it's a book or an article, but matter of fact, let me get further down because I think I want to get to what's most important. Okay, here we go. So another important principle was to recognize that the same words can be used to mean different things. This is especially important when it comes to the question of age. Often, quote unquote, boy refers specifically to the formal age grade of boys, i.e. those who have not been certified as 18, following two physical examinations performed first by their local parish and then by the Council of Athens. Those who failed this examination were sent back to boys, and the council fined the parish that had allowed this candidature to go ahead. In Athens, these under 18s were vigorously protected, rather like the young women in the Jane Austen novel. Although their younger sisters would have been expected to be married by the age of 15, these boys were escorted to the gymnasium by the slave pedagogue, who followed around at a distance by a pack of admirers. A guard of his honor, quote unquote, is how one source describes it, trying to explain the contradictory custom. Some images revealed a different picture. They showed under 18s in the gymnasium being sexually abused, not only by cadets, but even very occasionally by mature men. There are only a handful of such images produced in the decades of around 480 BC, but they have been endlessly reproduced in books so that they seem rather more plentiful. Some have thought such images must indicate yet another about turn in sexual attitudes, but the abused boys start to appear exactly the same time that we start to see the first images of the slave chaperones whose job it was to protect them. So what they're telling you is that the sexual assault of young boys got so bad that they had to have these slave pedagogues, and these slave pedagogues were older men hired by their families to watch over their children and basically walk them to the gymnasium. And they're saying that behind the pedagogues would be a group of onlookers, like men catcalling these little boys. So you got the boys in the front, the pedagogues, their chaperones behind them, and then a crowd of oogling, catcalling men behind them. So that's what they're describing. So this was something that was understood. The parents knew that when their children were being sent to the gym, they were being sent there to exercise naked. They knew that the culture was as such that their children could be and most times would be sexually assaulted. There was even information later in the article that dealt with the fact that the pedagogues started to basically pimp the boys. If they would get paid enough, they would just let the guys go have their way with them anyway. So this was the type of society that they were dealing with. And how does a child grow up that way? Imagine being a male child. You're going to the gym, and this is the concept of what a gym is. The meaning of the word says it all, to exercise naked. So you're sending your child to exercise naked with a bunch of other men. And the problem of being sexually assaulted was so crazy that you have to have slave chaperones. And of course, if they're slaves, they're not going to be getting the best treatment. So in their minds, okay, I'll pimp your child in. I don't have a problem with that. The whole society is on this type of stuff, so it's all good. And if you compare that society to where our society is going with all the stuff that's coming out every single week about some new deviant craziness, it's going in the same direction. And not only that, but that's when you start to see the true fall of an entire empire. When it gets to the point where just base human decency starts to disappear in a society, That is the greatest sign that the empire is on the precipice of complete disaster. Beyond the economics, beyond China, Russia, and all of that, just look at the people who are weakest in the society, the children, and look at how they're treated. And that will let you know how bad the society is falling. The quality of a society can be determined by the treatment of its most vulnerable. That would be its women, and that would be its children. And if you look at what America's become, not that it ever really was like this, but it's at its worst point in history, children, they have no protection. Women, especially Black women, have no protection. There's just video after video. One just came out yesterday of a 51-year-old man cold cocking a 12-year-old Black woman, Black girl, in a mall in North Carolina, and he could have killed that girl. When I heard his fist thunder crack off of her chin, and she just melted like a piece of ice sitting on a barbecue flame. She just melted to the floor, and her head just barely missed a steel cylinder. It's like a road stop that's usually used to stop terrorists. If they try to run into a building with a bomb, it'll knock them from being able to hit that building. It was one of those things. Her head almost hit her on the way down, and thankfully he was arrested for assault like 24 hours later. But the video is incredible. It's just incredible. So when you understand where our society has come to at this point, shooting up Black women, choking them to death in prison, hanging them and saying they committed suicide. The one in, I think it was Cleveland, where the cop jumped up on the hood of the car and they pumped 150 rounds. He's still with his 9mm, like it was some sort of movie superhero thing, and just pumped bullets into that sister and the brother sitting next to her, unarmed. And the rest of his colleagues had already put over 100 bullets in the car. Yeah, it lets you know. Look at the most vulnerable. See how they're treated. And it lets you know exactly how far society's fallen. So this is just information. Like I said, it's not against homosexual people. I have no problem with them. I have them in my family. Like I said, my wife's best friend is homosexual. This has nothing to do with being against you in any way, shape, or form as far as your personal, whatever you choose to do with your life is your life. It has no bearing on my life, so that's fine. But there's certain bits of information, I think, that you need to understand. So when you have people that are, you know, against these things, they might have things in their history, their family history, their background, that might tie into some of the stuff that I just dealt with.
U.S. voters backed Democratic plan to reopen the government by a 2-1 margin.
Is that Brother Otis?
Find more U.S. voters say President Trump's TV address was misleading. Whoa, what? Again, now it's a lot of tough thing for Trump voters to handle. I'm not a Trump voter. I was not a Hillary voter. You know.
Oh, I think maybe he unmuted himself by accident. So, yeah, I just wanted to touch on that pretty much just to give some perspective. So that's it with that. Next, I wanted to go back into hip-hop and the hustle of hip-hop. There was a good article that kind of dealt with some things. And
before you get into that, take us to our last break and get that number out one more time.
No problem. You are now live with Real Life, the radio show with myself, Ross, and my co-host, Jenna Kepra, on Black Talk Radio Network. And if you do wish to call in and make a comment or ask a question, please give us a call at 704-802-5056. That's 804-702-5056. Press ** if you wish to ask a question or make a comment, and please watch your background noise.
Yeah, just come on in if you need.
Cool. All right, so this deals with hip-hop, and the main thing, one of the main things I wanted to address, because it was dealt with Dr. Mumby's clip last week. We have to, because we've already given away everything. The commodification of hip-hop culture has destroyed some really sacred things that we once had. Because we were forced to speak the English language, we had to come up with clever ways of using the English language to speak to each other in ways in which the master couldn't understand what we were saying, which was the development of Ebonics, what we call slang, or what they call American African English. Excuse me, with the advent of hip hop, everybody's slang went from being regional, meaning that in New York, we had certain ways of doing the same things. You know, in Atlanta, they had their way of doing things, and so on and so forth across the country. And usually you can tell which artist came from where based on their accent and what slang they use. Now, because of the internet and social media, everything is hodgepodge now. New Yorkers are sounding like Southerners. Southerners are sounding like Philly cats. It's just everybody's using each other's slang. And we've now invited, for many years now, white folks to the party in a way in which they completely have deciphered our language. I remember back in the 80s, I saw the first commercial that used hip-hop. It was a Flintstones commercial, a Flintstones cereal. And Barney and Fred were playing Run DMC. And by the end of the commercial, Fred was chasing Barney. And they had like an old dinosaur record player that Barney was trying to cut, acting like he was Jam Master Jay. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is the beginning of the end. And I remember vividly saying, what we had is going to disappear, because now you got hip hop on TV. You got white folks using our slang. MTV was on the major come up as far as embracing hip hop, because for a long time they didn't play black music. Michael Jackson was the very first black artist they ever played. Before that, they never played any black music. So I saw what was to come, and I didn't realize it would be so thorough. So now we don't have a language we can speak in front of the slave master, and they don't understand what we're saying. Police know what we say. The average citizen knows what we say. We used to do that all the time, even when I ran the streets as a youth. All that's done. And now Dr. Mumby's saying they're doing the same thing on the continent. They're getting people to turn against their own people and themselves, really, because they're impoverished, with the poverty being caused by European activities on the continent, which sends them back to the same European powers to sell themselves out for money. And they're giving away the language. So now if we're trying to confer, like Minister Malcolm said in the video, get the white people out the room and have a conversation amongst ourselves, how are we going to do that when you got people going to these different European powers and giving away the language? And they made it crystal clear it's for military purposes. They're working with the military. In order to get that fast-track citizenship, in America they now fast-tracking you 10 weeks. 10 weeks? If you come from these specific African tribes and you're willing to give away, you know, the language to your white handlers, you get, in 10 weeks, you get full citizenship doing your thing, and then you can die like Amadou Diallo. Like they don't even understand what they're walking into and how far-reaching the ramifications of them giving away the language to the colonizer. Like, this is going to have a trajectory hundreds of years possibly in the future in regards to the damage it can do. And we have to get ourselves to a place where we don't have to be hustled, which means that Africans have to come together on the continent to change the leaders that they have in place. All of the puppet leaders need to be removed and replaced with people that are about the people. And the only people that can do that are the respective Africans in those particular countries. But really, like, I wanted to really bring home the ramifications of that, because in the Western Hemisphere, it's hip-hop that did it. And then we took the white supremacy that we grew up with here, and we spread it around the world. I just saw a documentary I posted on BTR Community about quote-unquote African gangs in Australia. And they literally looking like Crips and Bloods. They, you know, they got their Aussie accents, but these are Sudanese boys leaving war-torn regions of Sudan trying to get a fresh start. And because they're abused and mistreated, they've adopted gangster culture that they learned from Americans, from watching, you know, the same BT and all of that. And I remember when I went to Trinidad in the early 2000s and 50 Cent was playing out of every cab, every car, and I'm like, yo, what happened to the Calypso music? What happened to, like I didn't come to Trinidad to hear 50 Cent. I could have stayed in America for that. But it permeated everything. And during that time, the crime rate skyrocketed. This is in the 90s it happened with carjacking and all of that. They learned it once they came in contact with BET, MTV. When these things, this media was allowed on the Trinidadian airwaves, the entire society went downhill and it's never been the same ever since. And what they're saying is these Sudanese in Australia were already being marginalized because they're black. They make up less than 1% of the society. And what they did was they used hip hop to address the fears that white people had that demonized them. And it made the problem worse for them. So even though they make up less than 1% of the society, they're the poster children for street violence and gang violence, and it's not even that many of them doing it. So there is a great example. Trinidad is a great example of the exploitation of white supremacy with black faces propagating it. I remember Chuck D talking about doing a show in Germany, and 50 Cent was on the bill. And he said that he'll never forget seeing a stadium with 50,000 white German people screaming nigga every 5 seconds. He said the sonics of hearing 50,000 Germans who did not speak English but knew every word to 50 Cent song, and it was nigga, 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 kill, nigga, shoot, nigga, 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 nigga. And he said the sonic assault of that really made him understand how powerful a black representative of American brand of white supremacy can be. Let's stop getting hustled, because we're getting hustled into digging our own graves, stepping into our own graves, shooting ourselves in the head, and then putting the dirt on ourselves on top of that. Like, we're doing the complete job for them now.
Well, that's
and if we don't go ahead,
that's one of the things I wanted to talk about too. And you are a prime example of this, to where your father-in-law, he was a correctional officer, correct?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
You know, and so we have to, we tend to rag, well, let me not use that. We tend to talk bad, not you or I or the listeners, but we as a group tend to talk bad about the black public servants that we have. True enough, in my neighborhood where I grew up, they was harming us a lot more. But it was the discussion was brought up, and just in general, we also on the other side disrespect them a lot more than we do the white officers, slave catchers. Excuse me.
True.
And this wasn't in that clip of Malcolm, but he also stated, and I think Scotty said this several times too, to have these people, excuse me, to have us represented in those places. But with the current standpoint, how long would you think, like, as far as generations, to get what we know, especially those of us who came up in the projects in close proximity with these black slave catchers, how they beat us up, and now it's more of a media dominated presence of how to all slave catchers, and especially us when they found us, get plastered all over the internet, so that you can see that. How long would you think it take to for us, like when we was children, to start back respecting those officers, because they will be the ones governing us? These are just some of those questions that should be thought about when we're talking about the hustle that's going on by white supremacy. And
now, do you mean around what age that happened?
No, I mean, like, how many generations do you think it would take to get back to the to get back to a place to where it's just, how you doing, officer? You know, just being cordial. Because I know we have pockets of it, but overall, we tend to get even more tense when they show up.
I think it takes one. It doesn't take like 5-6 generations. I think you can do it in one. It's all about how you raise your children. That's why I stress that on this program. I really, really do, because a lot of things that I talk about are things that I did with my son. And, you know, now that he's a young adult, I see the benefits of that. That's why I say it. I never tell people to do something that I haven't done myself. And it's really about how you raise your children. That's what I mean when I say talk to your children about the system of white supremacy as early as possible. And you have to really know your child so that you know what to say and how to say it in a way in which you don't scare them. Because the fear usually starts at home. It's just what the buck breaking thing was. When a wife and his children, especially his male children, saw him violated like that, the mother would naturally effeminize her own son. Because that's what it took to make sure he survived to adulthood.
Yeah.
Don't look the white man in the eye. You know, say yes, sir, no, sir. Shuffle from foot to foot. Act like you dumb. Like, she would just completely emasculate her son. And it's not a negative thing on the black mother. Who would be able to watch something like that happen to their spouse in front of them and their child and not be completely psychologically damaged by that? And then we're 500 years down the road, and none of that has been dealt with psychosocially at all.
Well, let's
so think of the damage, the cumulative damage. Go ahead.
Let's go to this, because we're running short on time. I'm gonna have to. Let's go. One of the other videos that I played, and it was talking about.
I think we have a caller, though, out of New York City.
Yeah, if the caller has something, your mic is open. Okay, well, your mic can be open.
Hey, Peace. How you doing?
Oh, Peace. Yo, Peace, man. It's Cujo out here in NYC. Peace, Jenna.
Peace, Cujo.
Greetings.
Just a couple of things. I think I like what Jenna said, was asking. But how long, from what I'm seeing, the direction that we're going, as far as technology and everything else that was brought up in a lot of those videos, mm-hmm. it doesn't seem like it just seems a little bit like it seems way more urgent than I think most of us even take into concern. And I say that to say, like, the direction we're going as far as where, even our the balance within our communities between male and female, that energy is shifted, and we have to reverse that back. And one of the things that I think is really causing issues with that is exactly what you spoke about earlier, which is the lot of conflict between men and women in our so-called communities. And I don't know if we don't really start having some serious conversations, I don't know if that could really be resolved. A lot of the other things, like you said, that breaking up of the family is the key to all their success. Once they break us up, they could do anything they want with us separately, you know? And coming from Jamaica myself, absolutely, I would say that is true. My family was it just was a no in our family. Like, I don't even know anybody. I keep it 100 with you. I don't even know anybody in my family that is. And if they are, they're probably hiding it because of the repercussions of it.
Absolutely. And Trinidad is similar too. Go ahead.
Yeah, but it's definitely been there for some time. And the book you mentioned, Delectable Negro, just mentioning that to the callers, like, it is a good read. I'm currently reading that along with finishing up The Man Not. I didn't finish up The Man Not. And I think those two books are a very good read to get an understanding of the type of subjugation that black men dealt with and deal with. I think they're really strong books and on point. You know, that being said, thank you guys again. I'll mute my line.
Oh, thank you. Hey, thank you. Hold on before you go. Because I'd like to know your thoughts on this too. Because we talk about this recurring thing, this code, as far as everyone at least being able to be respectful. What do you think about this H.R. 40 bill? And I played that video, Roz, and you too, Cujo.
I think I didn't hear the full. I literally just tuned in when that part came on, but it sounded like a bill that was dealing with having conversations about.
Well, this is what it states off of. And everybody can go check this out. It's a huge document. You can go to www.congress.gov/bill, H.R. 40. Just a little small. The first thing it says is to address fundamental injustice, cruelty, brutality, and inhumanity, of slavery in the United States and the 13 American colonies between 1619 and 1865 to reestablish a commission to study and consider a national apology and proposal for reparations for the institution of slavery, its subsequent de jure and de facto racial and economic discrimination against African Americans and the impact of these forces on living African Americans, to make recommendations to Congress on appropriate remedies and for other purposes. So it was just to begin is very colorful language. Well, let me not say colorful, but it's a broad statement, which I think was maybe put in to appease some of the white people who have to approve it, but also leave some room on the back end to ask for just those things, reparations, in a number of different ways. But that's just how it starts off. Again, you can find that at www.congress.gov.
Now, that's interesting. My take on it is I don't see them going through with it because this is America, and really they're not about paying African people reparations. I mean, if it happened, I would be surprised. I'll put it like that. But I think it's a great step in the right direction as far as the bill that you read. Like you said, it's pretty much general as far as especially the beginning portion. But I think that towards the end, when they were talking about the pretty much the intergenerational effects that it has on today's Black people, I think that is really the most important thing. And I think that those families that, or those American African families that can, you know, show their family history as far as being descendants of victims of slavery, should get some sort of compensation for the work their ancestors did. But I really think it should center around programs. I think there should be programs that deal with the psychological impact of intergenerational trauma.
Well, that's what I mean by, that's what I was asking you what you think, because at the end, like I said, it allows for a lot more to happen. And this is the last sentence. Mm-hmm. And the impact of these forces on living African Americans to make recommendations to Congress on appropriate remedies and for other purposes. So that's what I mean by having it open in the back end for something else.
This is good.
Excuse me?
Oh, no, I was just saying that's actually good to leave it open, because with a lot of these bills, even when you see the ones that Trump signed, sometimes they'll throw stuff in there last minute. You know, like literally before it's signed, they might put something else in there and say, oh, we forgot to add this, blah, blah, blah. They'll just throw stuff in there. So if it comes to it, I think it should be open-ended, so that as the experts in the field, and I believe that they should be people of American African descent, doctors and scientists and things of that nature, should be the ones that facilitate what measures should be done to mitigate that intergenerational trauma and how it's affecting.
OG, we see OG come in. How are you doing tonight? Because we breaking down on these last 10 minutes.
Did we lose him?
Nah.
I still see him on the board, but he's muted on my end.
Yeah, he muted himself. But okay, my bad, Big O. We still can't hear you.
I don't know if you muted yourself on your line.
Peace.
Yeah, we can hear you. Cujo. But did you have a thought about that article?
I actually went to the website right now. I'm gonna take a look at it. It's interesting, but it's difficult because we know that they control so much of all these systems and all these resources. Why would they sign a bill into act that would make them weaker? Like, it just, you know, they just haven't been known to do that. And if right. they do it, there would be something added on to it that would, you know, in some form or way, help them to maintain their strength and if not get stronger. Like, it's, they've been doing that. They've been refining their skill sets for their system consistently for centuries now. So that, I don't see that passing unless there's something else that goes along with it, you know. And it's not to say, because I feel like attacking, countering racism, white supremacy should be done on all fronts. I don't think that people, you know, I don't think that people should just lay back and just go, now, nah, well, we'll stay out of the legal affairs because we don't have no wins. No, I think it's important that we do that. It's very important. But
just the track record. I feel what you're saying. I feel exactly what you're saying.
Can I ask something real quick?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you, brother Otis.
I just want to stick it down. Mr. Cujo, brother Cujo just hit on it, and y'all are tying it all together. I want to say this because I've listened for years when people try to tear down that bill. And everything y'all are saying is true, and I want you to try to figure out something else that most of the naysayers are not getting. John Conyers didn't spend 30-some years in that body and not understand that is the only body in government that can attach money and reparations to any bill. Mm. All funding starts there. So when you hear people talk about, it ain't doing this, it ain't doing that, it is actually, I heard Roz make a comment and Cujo just did too. Leaving it open and having precise language has taken, 14, 15 years of reconstructing this bill. If you go back and look at it when it was first introduced compared to now, that man actually did some good work. Whether or not it's picked up now by current people and then done exactly what Roz says, have the right experts there to shape that bill so it can manifest itself, so our children are not just getting paid off with $40,000, $50,000, and you go and give it back to the system. Mm-hmm. It should be structured so that for generations to come, descendants of enslaved Africans get preferential treatment and banking and education throughout every bit of what it takes to be a whole citizen. Because there's no question that slavery has been revamped and reprocessed us in every form imaginable, from redlining to police brutality. So if we can get that bill structured properly and then execute it, then funding becomes a part of it. That's why it's designed the way it is. So when you hear these naysayers out here talking about, oh, it ain't got this, it ain't got that, there's a process to that that Congress, and it's a lot more convoluted than most people think. Everything from getting stuff to committees to getting it backed by the right people so that it can have the right strength and the right duration, just like I'm saying. Instead of a one-time give you some money mess, it should be structured so our people could actually benefit from it. And it's just going to take more than just dumping some money on somebody for 8, 9, 10 years and then thinking you solved a problem that Roz has rightly said. It's got repercussions from, what, 4 centuries of harm. Thanks, gentlemen.
Oh, thank you.
I appreciate you, because that is the, I mean, you just tied it all together right there. And the thing is that, like you said, if we can get it executed properly, it can really do something powerful. And also, it makes me think of something that Dr. Clark used to tell us all the time. They got him on film saying it too. And even Malcolm, Mr. Malcolm used to say, you know, freedom should be taken and determined by the victims, not the people who have perpetrated the victimization. And the hard part is, you know, we do have to function within the system because it's the dominant system. We don't have a system of our own instated that we can deal with to get the situation mitigated. So in a lot of ways, are just forced to go right back to the same people who victimized us. But if we work it the right way, there's a lot that can be gained from it. But then also remember, too, that we have to set the trajectory of what we see true freedom as and continue to work towards getting that, which is instating a system of justice and ending white supremacy. So like Cujo so eloquently stated, no group of people are going to help you better yourself so that you can basically knock them out of their position of power. Just like Dr. Clark used to say, white people are not going to train their enemies on how to overthrow them. It just doesn't work that way. So we have to continue to do the things we're doing. And I think that when we played the clip of Minister Malcolm dealing with codification in minute detail, that is the program we need to be on. He laid it out so well and made it so plain. That is why, even in our intro music, that was one of the reasons I used that in the beginning of the track, is because it was that powerful. I've used it at the time in reference to hip hop, but it ties directly into this program and what this program is about in regards to us mitigating the system and doing the things we need to do and seriously considering altering our behavior, our system of behavior when it comes to dealing with each other, when we encounter each other.
Well, that was pretty interesting, man. Once again, thank you, because I've been having a whole lot of stuff that I'm trying to take care of, and you have done your thing, man. I appreciate that.
I appreciate you, man. And the call is, it's been powerful, but I just, you know, we go through these kind of things all the time, and it's really about trying to bring the best information possible and help people really understand the things that we think are important for us to understand so we can try and make better decisions for ourselves.
Yes.
Go ahead. You say something?
But I was, those three videos, they was exactly for tonight as far as, and I should have played them, Amos, then Malcolm, then the last one, but that's the process. That should be the end goal.
Right.
As far as, for those speaking about nation building, it should be understand with Amos Wilson, understanding why we act the way we act, and then try to attack that part. We can handle that. That's great. One stage down. And then we go to the community code, what Malcolm was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we hate each other so much, but then we love everybody else, right? That's always the thing that happens. And right. Then at the end of that, then we could start being serious about this pursuit of things like HR 40. Because we will all be focused on the same thing. But it's that time. If you'll go ahead on with your closing thoughts and hit us with the prayer.
Sure. My favorite African proverb, if there are no enemies within, enemies without can do little harm. The solving of this problem starts with us, and Malcolm made it abundantly clear what I've been saying for many years now. We need to coalesce around solving the problem. That's what the term community means, common unity. What are you commonly unifying around? Ending the system of white supremacy. I don't care what religion you practice. I don't care what your sexual orientation is. I don't care about anything that has to do with your personal choices or decisions. I care about, are you on the same page that we have a problem, our enemy is the same enemy, and that we need to do something about this like yesterday? And are you really about that work? That's the only real questions I got. And that's the code that we should have with each other. Whenever we're around white people, we cease any arguments and desist immediately. Once we're back amongst ourselves, if we're having some disagreement and it got to continue, then it continues. But when others are around that are not us, we don't do it. We don't name call other black people, especially around other non-black people, but we just don't do it. We don't mistreat each other. We don't abuse each other verbally or physically. We don't sell drugs to each other. We don't shoot at each other. We don't attempt to kill each other. These are the rules that we need to set and make sure that that code is abided by. And if we can get to that place with each other, a lot can change. Remember that the foundation of a nation is family. That is why they've been so successful at dominating us. They've destroyed our families. They've turned the children against the adults, the men against the women, and women against the men. When you look at how white people successfully dominate us in this country, their families are intact. Their families are intact.
Yeah.
No matter how dysfunctional they are or whatever the case may be, they still have intact families. I've seen homeless white families, and it's the father, the mother, and their children, even when they're homeless. And with us, it's epidemic non-family. One parent household, whether it's a male parent, most of them are female parent households, or grandparent headed household. That is the beginning of our healing, and that is the beginning of our rise as a collective, is to get our families together. That's why I keep stressing, it's the future we have to raise to have that code from birth. We're too friggin' tainted. We're infected, and we need to not pass that infection on to the best of our ability and create a plan that is intergenerational, where you pass the torch to the next ones, your children. And you give them your instructions on what to do moving forward with their children and the improvement of our descending lineage. And what you'll have is in one, possibly two generations, a collective of totally different American African children who are about getting things done and who do not disrespect themselves or each other and don't look in the mirror and hate themselves and don't pick the white doll over the black doll. That's
and
what you'll have.
It spreads.
So that's my final thoughts. I know we're about to get out of here, so I don't want to be too long-winded. I know I can do that, so I want to spare you that. Thanks for spending this Tuesday evening with us. We greatly, greatly, greatly appreciate each and every one of you. Thanks to you, Brother Otis, for your insightful information and your commentary. Thanks to you, Brother Cujo, for your insightful information and commentary. We greatly appreciate you all. Thanks to the other calls and listeners and to those who will listen to the podcast. We greatly appreciate you. Please continue to donate to Black Talk Radio Network, as well as join BTR community so we can keep this this platform alive and continue to give the information and provide the information that that we see fit to help people, and we found out helps a lot of people, and we appreciate that as well. So we're going to close out the show, and we'll see you next week. Creator willing. Creator, we ask that you help us to remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us to remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest level of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time, especially each and every time we are in contact with another black person. Like Gus says, it has been time. Let's replace white supremacy with justice immediately. And let's end the prison industrial complex and human trafficking. I am in the love of the all, and all love is in me. I am a part of the all, and the all is a part of me. I am one with the all, and the all is one with me. I can succeed as a part of the all and fail as an individual. I can be all that I wish in the all, as long as my wish is to stay in the all. I am never alone. The all is, I am. The all can, I can. The all does, I do. Once again, thanks for spending your Tuesday evening into the night with us. Peace and love. Stay safe. Stay out of the hands of slave catchers. And Creator willing, we will see you next week. Please stay safe. One love.
Peace, peace. One love.
Peace.